What's up, guys? This is Kaylee Johnson here with Digital Journey. If you're a person that's wanting to learn social media, maybe that's just for you personally, maybe it's for your business, this is the right place for you. Well, guys, I'm super pumped today. We have Christian Hammer on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Kaylee, I'm super excited to be here. It's going to be a fun time.
Yes, I'm excited. So Christian has an amazing history. I'm really excited to get to hear more from him. He's a lifelong artist, as you can see if you're watching on YouTube with some of the stuff behind him. A trailblazing entrepreneur, a visionary technology executive with an illustrious 30-year career. From orchestrating digital transformations to founding direct-to-consumer businesses, Christian's journey has been nothing short of extraordinary, leaving a market industry giants like Nike, AppNexus, and Wayfair. He's currently at the helm as the CEO for Vala AI. Christian's dynamic leadership extends beyond tech with impactful roles on nonprofit boards and as a vital force behind deep tech startups on their board of directors. Thank you so much. I'm super excited to get to chat with you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here. It's so funny hearing it read back to me because I typed the thing out. I'm like, man, there's a couple words in there I need to change because they're hard to say, aren't they?
Yeah, it's different once it's all read back. So tell us a little bit about yourself or a lot about yourself. I mean, you have a lot to go through. So tell us how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, well, I was lucky in timing in life, which helps a lot when you're trying to go far. But I started my first company. I was really, really young. My parents and my brother will tell a story about me being in daycare and like convincing all the kids to buy those little origami throwing stars. I don't know if you knew what those, if you had those things, but I used to make those and then I started paying some kids to make them and other ones to sell them and did a little catalog and
stuff.
That's
awesome.
I'm always interested in learning new things and I like to learn them early enough that I can share them with others. Cause that's the joy part. Now you mentioned that like ADD, like I have it so severely, it's terrible, but that was always the joy for me was I learned it. I'm sharing it with you. Okay, now that you're starting to learn it, I'm going to learn the next thing.
Exactly. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. We're going to the next thing. But when I was in university, I was actually going to school originally to become an architect, not like a software architect, but an architect, because as an artist and somebody who's fairly technical, it was at that time, it seemed like the best career option for somebody like me. But in 1994, the first browser hit the world, and all of a sudden, all that tech geek knowledge I had in the back of my head became valuable, like in a way that I never expected it to be.
Yes.
And started my first digital company that year, and we did the real early internet, like design for local stores and stuff like that, their early websites.
Okay.
But a group of us had come up with, like everybody and their mom felt like it was doing it at the time. I actually joked because there was a nunnery in France that was doing web design in 1996. And I was like, well,
okay, that's
it.
Funny.
We're done. Yeah, everybody's doing it now. We're done. But
it's been done.
Yeah, if a nunnery in France is doing it, like, it's not that. It's not that forward-looking. But we came up with a theory on how the web would transform the world. And in what order and sequence that would follow. What was crazy is that we talked about things like, talked about type zero, which were digital already. So things that existed in the world only digital. There weren't that many at that time, like software, right, would be. But type one was what was really interesting to all of us. And that was things that existed digitally, but weren't sold digitally. At the time, that would have been music and books or video games and stuff like that. It was all a CD-ROM got shipped to you or a physical item. And they made sense because if you wanted to ship it, you needed to fit in a mailbox and it needed to be cheap. And so if you're going to sell it online, it was a perfect match. And we went all the way up to type five. Type five was things that would never be sold online. Here's the fun part. In 2019 and 2020, I bought every single one of those type five things online. That was live animals. We bought a horse and imported it from the Netherlands. Homes, we bought one and moved into with never seeing it. Cars, bought a Tesla, we bought it online. And furniture, I was at Wayfair at the time, so of course, like, I bought my furniture online.
Yes, big focus there.
But, yeah. But as time went on, I had a lot of opportunities to do some fun things. And by 2001, when the dot-com bubble burst, I'd had a couple of really good successes. And then 2001 wow. happened, and we all didn't. I think, like a lot of people, and it's probably going to happen again really soon, but I don't mean a bubble bursting. I just think a lot of people looking at what comes next and how they're impacted by it, and AI is going to have that kind of questioning moment. In 2001, a lot of us looked at our careers and said, what the heck have we been doing? Like, have we been building anything meaningful, or was it all just froth and excitement with no substance? So I started looking for opportunities to take what I thought I was good at and apply it to big companies that needed the same thing. And my first real opportunity with that was at Nike, where they were looking for somebody to inject the digital DNA and help them bring out, build up their direct-to-consumer business. So at the time, it was like $100 million that they did a year in direct-to-consumer, which was like their Nike stores and stuff like that.
Wow.
But we built,
wow.
Yeah, we built the Nike e-commerce website out, grew that globally. The Nike ID product, the digital design online, get your shoe made custom sneaker app and a bunch of other fun stuff, and turned it into, by the time I left, about a $2.5 billion a year company within
Nike.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. And you get those opportunities when you're like early to things. And if you're always chasing the next, what's coming next and being excited about it, which thankfully with severe ADD, I'm always that person, right? I'm always right at the next thing because I'm bored otherwise. Yeah.
And that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
They say most entrepreneurs and people who make it up there actually have ADHD, because they're the ones that are always, you know, not content with where they're at. And they're like, we're going to keep trying new things and keep going after stuff. So I understand that.
Yeah. And that's actually, my career's always looked like that. I got bored with e-commerce pretty early. By 2001, I was pretty much done with it. But then Nike kind of reinvigorated it a bit. Learned a lot from them, too. It's an amazing place to learn how brands are built, because that's what Nike is, right? That led me to ad tech, because it was such a mess and I didn't understand it and it seemed impossible. And I don't mean like showing you an ad. I mean, like, how do we get the data about you and about the content to somebody who cares enough to buy it in milliseconds when there's billions of people online all the time, right? It's nuts. So we built AppNexus out. We eventually sold that to AT&T for a lot. That got me to Wayfair, of all places, because they were looking for somebody to come and help them build out their ad tech stack. How are we going to transform, like, our, at the time, you know, very strong focus on the home piece, but how are we going to really transform our business and become a lot more profitable? And they looked at ad tech in the way that they should, which is demand shaping. It's not really about getting buyers. It's about making sure your buyers are where you can get products to them.
Yes.
You don't want somebody buying a sofa 800 miles away from where you have the sofa. That sucks.
Right.
But I wasn't interested in ad tech anymore. I was already done with it. And Eric and Steve were really, really kind. And I said, well, like, what are you interested in? And I said, I don't know. Like, what's broken? And they said, well, logistics, supply chain. We're building up this new thing, Castlegate. And they gave me the opportunity to jump in there. And it was a fascinating experience. Loved working with those guys. We doubled the revenue of the company while I was there, which was fantastic. And by the end of, I'd say it was like 2020 was just coming around. COVID was huge. It was a problem.
Right.
And I was asking myself, like, why the hell am I worried about shipping sofas when people aren't getting medicine and food anymore? And I got the opportunity, thanks to TradeLens, to go and try and solve the problem I was solving for Wayfair. I got to solve it for the whole globe, or at least try to. And that was TradeLens, which was a partnership between all the ocean carriers in the world, World Bank, United Nations had a big chunk of it with their Asset Food Initiative, and then IBM. And they brought me in as their CTO to help kind of build that up. We rolled that into Maersk almost exactly a year ago, and that's when I started Vala AI. And again, it's one of those, like, we've been doing machine learning for a long time. Going back to my ad tech days, we were heavily in that. And before that, with e-commerce, we were doing product recommendations and that kind of fun stuff. With Wayfair and with TradeLens, we do a lot of predictive systems where we were like, okay, that will get there by this date because of
math, right.
Right. So it wasn't a big stretch to move into AI, and I was very, very excited with what's possible. And it actually started, God, I'm still talking, but it started with the day I saw ChatGPT-3 come out, and my initial reaction was, oh my God, my career's over. Everything that I've done my entire life can now be done by the machine.
I think that was a lot of people's reaction.
Yeah, yeah. A second later, though, I went, wait, that's great. That's a fantastic thing, because I'm just a translator between the wants and needs of people and what they want the computer to do. Why do we need a translator? Why can't we just tell the computer what we want? And that's actually the premise that we have with Vol AI and how we're trying to fix a lot of what happens in enterprise technology. And I say that the real impetus for that was my wife, who's got alphabet soup after her name with advanced degrees and certifications, all that stuff. But the vast majority of her career is really managing technology that is supposed to enable her, but it doesn't. It holds her back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, how does she fix that? Well, she comes to somebody like me as an imprecise translator to the computer. Like, let's get rid of that. Let's get her right to it. And now we're here.
Yeah. I know, I remember when ChatGPT came out, and at that point I was working as an intern for a company doing their social media, and I was writing the content, and I freaked out. I was like, oh my goodness, are they going to replace me? You know, I was like, now they can just type it all in. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that, like, subconsciously people can tell if something's completely AI written or if something has that personal touch. And so to me, you know, you can read it and you might not be like, oh, that's AI. But if you think about it or you dissect it, you're like, this does not sound fully like normal speech, you know? And so it's like, okay, our human jobs are still needed. And I know, especially in digital media, so many people, you know, before I started my business, I was looking into going into marketing, and everyone was like, no AI, no AI. And I was like, but AI is helpful. Yes, it can be abused, but it can save so much time and help generate ideas. And, you know, I'm like, don't disregard it completely just because it's a newer thing and some people view it as scary. It can really help. We all know that social media can be overwhelming. You think it takes so much time. You look at all these amazing creators who are doing insane viral posts and think, how can I ever measure up to them? The good thing is, you don't have to. Your point for being on social media is probably to earn money. You want to increase your sales. You want to gain more clients, so that you can have more free time to pour into your clients, to pour into your family. Digital Journey can help you with that. We have a group coaching program targeted specifically for people who are overwhelmed with social media. It's really not as complicated as you think. We can teach you how to spend 15 minutes or less a day on social media so that you can gain more clients and you can up your sales. So if you want to learn more, you can go to digital-journey.net, and we'd love to help you out. Now, back to the episode.
Yeah, especially when you're early, right? Because when you're just a solo entrepreneur building your business from the ground up, you need every bit of leverage you can get, and that blank page problem is terrible in marketing. What are we going to do?
Yes.
What's it going to say?
Yeah. Exactly. And I love it even just for generating ideas. You know, I'm like, I am stuck and I don't know what to write about. You know, give me some prompts. And it, you know, at least gets my brain moving then versus staring at a blank page. So you've been involved in the advertising world and AI. How do you think AI is going to continue to impact the world of advertising?
I think that you actually touched on the first place it'll impact it, which is on the generating the ideas. It's like anything else. When you're online, you've got the opportunity to be in front of millions, if not billions of people, fairly rapidly. And that gives you the opportunity to do something that in a lot of places we've done for a long time, which is the A/B multivariate testing of, hey, does this work? Does this work? Does this work? And you can set up separate channels with that and have that being audited by something that's doing an analysis of how effective it is. So you can try many, 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 many ideas and start to see which ones work and then start pivoting towards the ones that are more effective even faster. I think that that's where it starts to happen. I think that on the other side, there's a sentiment analysis, which has always been kind of broken. which is, I used to use the example, I don't know if it's still relevant, but Nike at one time would have bought any online ad that mentioned Tiger Woods in it because he was such a big part of their
right.
But I said, no, they wouldn't. Like, they might buy it today because they don't know, but if it's a an article about Tiger Woods getting divorced, they do not want it. Right?
But if it's difference there.
Right. If it's about him winning a championship, they definitely want it. They'll pay more for it. So you've got to be very aware of the sentiment of it, the context of it, and also who's interfacing with it. And I think especially as that proliferates across things like social media channels, where you've only got a couple, you know, moments of people's attention time with your post or your vid or whatever, it'll give you more opportunities to try that before you find the one that sticks, and then you can double down on the ones that are working, right? It'll give you the ability to do that a lot faster, a lot more effectively, and that's good. I think it does disrupt a lot of the jobs that are in that space, unfortunately. Like, the blank page problem is one that you used to fill with a lot of copywriters, people just like spitting out ideas, right? Right. You don't need that now. You can sit down and have any number of tools and have a good output. So, yeah, that'll change pretty rapidly. I think, though, this is similar to what we're already seeing generationally. Like, my parents' generation basically ate any advertising they were given. If somebody told them it was cool, they bought it because they had not developed an immunity to it.
Whereas interesting.
By the time you get to my generation, we've seen so much. We've been advertised to our whole lives that we're pretty skeptical, but I don't think we're nearly as skeptical as people that were like inundated with it their whole lives. Right?
Yes.
And so I think that it's going to be, I don't know, like you were saying, you can tell when it's not real. I think that that's actually a good thing, though. I think that advertising will start to become less and less effective.
Right. And having that personal touch is what can set you apart from companies, because it can be so simple just to be like, I'm just going to let AI write it all, or, you know, I'm just going to let them design my videos. But if people know, okay, this company's taken time to hire a person, they care about me that much. And, you know, it's that warmth from a person that shows, you know, they don't just want my money, they value me. And that's what so many people are craving right now, is to be seen and not just be one of the mass numbers. And so, you know, learning how to utilize AI and use it as a tool and not as the only source is something I think is going to be very valuable and important as AI continues to grow.
100% agree. The human factor of it's so critical. And the, I think you said the most important part in there, you took the time to care, is the way I think about it. If you care enough about me to take the time to put a human being involved in it and make sure that they're like being authentic and real with it instead of it being something that's just generated, that's a huge difference. I hope that's what starts to happen. I like with the rise of social media, we saw a really disturbing trend in human interaction where people started, like it felt like you were always connected, but you weren't.
Right.
And maybe we start to see the inversion of that, where people no longer spending so much time online and social interactions that way because they know it's fake and craving the real world interactions and real interactions that way. I hope that's what we start to see, because that's what I,
yes,
it's the world I want to live in.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's, and especially with COVID and everything like that, that changed all of it to where we were so excluded from everyone and relied primarily on technology. I think in a way, I think it did two things. I think it made businesses, you know, more reliant on technology and realize more of the strengths of it, because, you know, we were all pretty much working from home and we were doing Zoom meetings and we were having to figure out all of that. But then it made people think, okay, there is something different, and I miss going out and seeing my friends, and I miss grabbing coffee versus just FaceTiming, because that in-person aspect of it is so vital. So I think, you know, as social media continues to grow, one thing that we talk a lot about is being authentic and, you know, not putting on a mask or not doing something just because another company's doing it. But, you know, our goal with social media is to grow your business so that you can reach more people, not just increase your money. You know, so like valuing the customer instead of just valuing profits.
That's the most, I feel sometimes completely disillusioned with the world that we've built around us. In the, like my 30 years in technology, what we've built feels like the exact opposite of what we were hoping for and what we were trying to accomplish. We were trying to connect the world in ways that weren't possible before. We were trying to make it so that you could know about your friend and everything that they wanted to share about you. You could know about their day in ways you couldn't before. You had access to things maybe in your small town that you couldn't buy before because you get it online. But unfortunately, what we saw was like the giants arise and the wall, you know, Main Street of your little town disappears and people become isolated. Their whole interaction's online. It's not with people anymore. And for me, like I'm fairly introverted. I love working from home, but I still crave the interactions, you know, going out and meeting people. I go to conferences and things now just so I can be around human beings. It's like, hey, there's a startup thing happening in Seattle. I'm just going to go talk to people in real life for once. And it's surprising to me, though. I actually thought that we were headed down that path a long time ago, but it didn't go that way. And it's the unintended consequences of a lot of the decisions we made. And sometimes, and I think often, the unintended consequences were due to chasing money. Like, where is the money at in this? Rather than, where is the connection in this? What's the human benefit to this? What's the value that we create for society in this? That got lost. And going back to that's exactly what's needed.
Yeah.
It's actually our original tagline for Bala AI. I still have it on my screens. We say we're setting human potential free. We're trying to do all the work that nobody wants to do. There's a lot of stuff in technology that's just janitorial work. And I'm not trying to denigrate janitorial work, but most people don't want to be a janitor.
When
it comes to technology, there's a lot of stuff out there that nobody wants to do, but it needs to be done. It's bad sanitary behavior if you don't do it. I'm like, cool, I hate doing those things. Let's automate that so that the people can actually go and do the things that they want to do. They can go and create and innovate. They can go build new and exciting things. Let's get all the garbage out of their way.
Yeah, no, that's very true. You know, utilizing it to where you're not going to lose that human touch. So one last thing, what is one emerging technology that you think is exciting and why?
I think the quantum computing space is really interesting and it excites me. Although I don't think it's the one that excites me personally the most. It's just one that I'm like, what's going to happen when all of a sudden, you know, a lot of our technology is based off of encryption that's effectively useless once we have quantum computing that allows it to basically interrogate the entire world in one moment. But the one I'm most excited for personally is eVTOL, because like there's so many, I live on an island outside of Seattle. And for me to get anywhere, I have to take a boat. I have to take either a ferry or I have to get on a boat.
Wow.
And I like boats, but it's inconvenient, right?
And
Seattle's also in bad traffic. I lived in Boston before that. Boston has bad traffic. It's very difficult to get from point A to point B quickly. And that, as somebody who's, like I said, fairly introverted, any excuse not to go somewhere, my brain will be like, not doing it because it's going to take me an hour to get there. I don't want to do that.
100% agree. Yes.
So that one for me feels freeing. It feels like a way of being able to like, okay, the excuse is gone. Go do it.
Yeah. No, that's very true. It's like, eliminate those excuses so that, you know, I'm an introvert also. So it's like, if there's a reason that I might not be able to do it a lot of times, I'll be excited about doing it beforehand. And then I'm going to be like, oh, wait, you know, oh man, I can't do that now. So eliminating those things helps with that social aspect, at least for me. And I know other introverts also. So
it also seems like it would be a lot less environmentally impacting because you don't have tires, being shredded into the waterways and all that kind of stuff, as well as it's just point to point straight lines, a lot shorter than roads going around to get to a location, right? So that one I'm very, very interested in. I've been excited for it since I was a little kid. And I watched the Jetsons on TV and I was like, flying cars, I can't wait, right? Still not here.
I know. Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was a great conversation. It was awesome learning more about what you do and just the world of AI in general, because it can be overwhelming and people get scared of it and don't know where to look. So having that little bit of insight on it was fantastic. Where can my listeners find you if they want to know more about what you do?
Yeah, there's a bunch of places. ChristianHammer.io is where all the press stuff gets posted, but it's also where I'm going to start posting just my general thoughts that have nothing to do with my company. Vala.ai.com is the company's website. CHammer1 on LinkedIn. I'm always available there. And actually, if you want to see my paintings, it's letterc-hammer.com, which go check them out if you want. I had a lot of fun with those.
Amazing. And we'll have all of that linked down below. So thank you so much for coming on. I would recommend going and checking out his artwork. I saw a little bit of it. You can see the painting behind him. And even just from that little bit, it's beautiful. So I would check that out. So thank you so much for coming on. This was great to have you.
Kaylee, absolute pleasure. Love being here.